thank you. I was going to talk to you today in the 10 minutes that I have, mainly focusing on capture and sort of process that we've been developing around digital forensics at the Bodleian. But I thought I'd start at the start. And really our sort of first foray into digital forensics at the library was accidental. And it happened because we were engaged in a project called Paradigm, which some of you may know about, which was more about proactive collecting of all digital material. But during that project, complete serendipity, we happened to be cataloguing the Barbara Castle archive. Now, Castle was a prominent Labour politician in the cabinet in the UK, and we had her papers, some 500 boxes or so. But during the cataloguing project, we also received some discs and some computers. And so the cataloguer came to me with those items, and we had to think about what to do with digital media, as well as file transfers that we were getting in from contemporary politicians. And luckily enough, Jeremy had been doing some work at the British Library in his digital scriptorium, and we were able to go to him, and he very kindly helped us out. And from that point forward, really, we started to adopt digital imaging for removable storage media and those sorts of media that we get into the collection of the library. But we were really only doing that in a very sort of haphazard way. We weren't using things like write blockers or anything along those lines. And what we'd seen working with Castle at the British Library really sort of gave us a flavour for what could be possible. And moving on from projects like Paradigm and the subsequent project Cairo, we developed a proposal for a project called Future Art, which has enabled us to sort of look much more deeply about how we can use forensics in our work, and to embed it in our capture processes in a much more thorough way, but also to look at the potential for analysis and appraisal and those sorts of things. And as part of the Future Art project and using forensics tools, we've been starting to put this sort of procedure into place. And one of the results in that is the Beam processing method. Beam is our Bodleian electronic archive and manuscript repository for this sort of born digital archival material. And you can see the sort of topics that it's covering there. And I'm going to sort of step through some of the things that we do just to give you a sort of flavour for what that involves. And I should credit Victoria Stoyan here, who's employed as our graduate trainee on the project, and who's really been a great help in sort of putting this together and actually documenting the process. So the first part is treating the media. And we have a policy now of transferring all born digital media away from the sort of physical paper collection to Beam so we can actually do something with it and get it into a digital preservation archive. So CMD there is short for Collections Management Database. So one of the changes we've instigated is to record formats coming into our collections now. It's not something we've done historically, which has put us in a bad position because we don't necessarily know how much digital material we do have, but we're recording that as well going forward. And this enables us to identify what we have. So we have a process of separating material. The blue form is the picture, as a separation form. We keep one copy with the digital media and one with the paper. And so when a cataloguer comes to a collection later on, they can see where a disc has been removed from it, sort of connect the pieces together. And we give each object an identifier. We keep an inventory, which sort of accrues metadata. And similarly to Stanford, we photograph everything. For the moment, we're retaining all the digital media. I'm not sure that that's something that we will continue to do forever. And it was interesting to hear earlier, I'm not sure who raised the question of whether we treat Salman Rushdie's archive the same as we treat another archive, and perhaps there's a different grade of preservation. And I certainly know that we have blank optical discs that in themselves tell you very little at all, and is that really worth retaining? For the moment, we are, but that's something I think we may want to revisit. And the idea behind all this is that we can manage the process and get the digital image into the preservation archive, but also then that we don't need to give the cataloguing archive access to the physical media as such. That's not how they're going to access the material. And this is our sort of lab space, our processing room. And this is used by a number of people. I spend a bit of time in there on the sort of digital archiving side of things. Victoria does a lot of disk imaging for us, but also archivists who are cataloguing collections spend time in here working on the sort of analysis phase. We have our sort of forensic toolkit software installed in here. So it's really a sort of environment for lots of people to be working. And the sort of, the environment is very sort of closed down to set the sensitive materials that we have. We have an isolated network and a range of platforms in there. And this is Alfred. And we tend to use this for most of our imaging work. It supports a very wide range of media, although we're finding that at the moment the majority of what we have in our holdings are 3.5-inch floppies and optical media. We have a whole host of other things as well, but those are things that dominate. To date we've had 5 hard disk drives, and I can see they're going to come in base numbers. And for most of our imaging, our capture work, we're using the SDK imager, which you can see working there. You can see those sort of hash values that are created from the message. I also wanted to note that we're continuing to do the proactive work with donors, so as well as sort of dealing with these sort of dead discs, we also use tools like FDK Imager when we go out and work with living donors as well. We also wanted to address this issue of scalability, so one of the things that we did in this grant was to look at sort of mass imaging. We have some collections with sort of hundreds of optical media discs, and we thought we'd have a go at this, and found actually that there are some issues with that, that not all optical media are the same. There are lots of different variants, and we had a bit of fun and found some lessons learned, really. And this particular piece of hardware is used in conjunction with the Infineodyne CD-DVD inspector software, so that's another kind of forensic software. And as part of the lessons learned, we've developed a kind of issue log, and we're hoping that over time, as we sort of accrue data in this, that we'll sort of learn much more about what we're doing, and sort of identify general trends and see where the problems are and be able to adjust our practices and procedures accordingly. I mentioned earlier that we keep a disk inventory, and this is the sort of metadata that we record, and not only are we recording metadata about the physical disk, with a view to this being useful both to the cataloguing archivist who's going to come along at some stage and process the archive, but also potentially to the end researcher who's going to have access to those photographs on the disks and also the sort of caption metadata. But this is also a log of the imaging process, what hardware configuration software we can use and when we've imaged it and what the hash value was and those sorts of things. And here we also make a very brief note of what the scope of content is, what the covering dates are, which again should help us sort of an initial survey for the cataloging archivist later on. And we don't just deal with modern stuff, so we are also buyers from eBay, and these are some of the things that we have bought. And some of those things also being donated by various people within the university and outside. And as part of doing this forensic work, we've had to learn a lot about sort of new areas, and some of those are actual physical media, so we've developed a media recognition guide, but also file systems again, so we have another internal guide for that as well. And actually the media recognition work, you'll find some of that on the project blog, and we'll get to the URL a bit later, if any of you are interested. The file systems we haven't put online yet, but we may do. This is an example of perhaps not such a prominent hybrid archive. It's the archive of John Barton, who was a professor in Roman law at the university. And this is sort of something that may be typical in hybrid speech. So we have a sort of single hard disk drive there. We've got 150 3.5-inch floppy disks, also maybe 8 1/4-inch. And Victoria's been imaging those. I think she made about 130 disks through. And again, similarly with Stanford, we've had issues with bad sectors. And if people are interested, I've actually brought along the disk inventory for the work that she's done on that so far, and you can get a feel for exactly how many disks are bad sectors. And this is the sort of analysis stage. So the FDK software is what we're using this for. It's the same software that you can see in the screenshot that Michael showed earlier. And this particular collection is Edmund Dell, which is one of the archives that we're processing under the grant. And we've found this actually very useful. Some of the terminology isn't quite what you would understand in the archival community, but the facility to preview lots of different file formats we've certainly found very useful. It has functionality for labelling files, which is useful for allocating them to archival series, bookmark things. It automatically gives files an identification. We can see what are software files and what are data files, and we can also identify duplicates, and that's very useful indeed. Another view, this time of the archive of Alan Bennett, for a few 3.5-inch floppy disks. That one was particularly interesting for the range of legacy word processing formats that we used, and FTK was able to preview all of them. And this helps us a good deal, because all we're doing is supplying an image file. We don't have to do any migration work at this stage. So anything that we want to migrate in terms of access copying, we do that and we know what it is that we're keeping and going to be supplying to the researcher. This is a view of a sort of slightly different pane in FTK, which gives you some preview of the graphics of Barbara Castle. Mm-hmm. Nothing political there. And finally, the metadata export functionality we found extremely useful for FTK. So this is a CSV spreadsheet that can export the sort of detailed metadata that it provides. And the cataloguers use this. They can add things to the series and make notes of which files should be restricted and those sorts of things. We found that very useful. I just wanted to sort of give a flavour of how quickly the more digital collections are growing. This is by no means comprehensive. We find stuff. I mean, the John Barson archive, I think, had been here for a few years, but maybe it was a few months ago that I discovered that we had those. So my knowledge of what we have has grown since we implemented the collection management database. I think that's represented on there somewhere. But you can sort of see that the sort of gathering of the dots together is much denser more recently. And I expect we'll sort of start filling in those gaps once we sort of start processing collections and finding those disks. So we've got various collections in process at the moment and at different phases. Some of them in the process of being separated out from the large paper collections, some of them in the capture phase for imaging, some of them being appraised, some of them being catalogued, and some of them we're sort of preparing for publishing and getting out there into the research space. And one of the issues that I have found is that way our special collections department works, we tend to bring in project catalogers. So I'm supporting a number of those at sort of different phases of projects at the moment. And we really want to be able to bring those people in to sort of work on the sort of the forensic toolkit analysis machine. And we have one license for that at the moment. And I think we need more. We need to be able to sort of grow the laboratory area, so that we can have multiple people working in there at once. So scheduling work at once is a bit difficult. So there are some scalability issues with our current software. And that's it. Thank you.